All right. Fuck it. Welcome to Small Cast episode whatever. The very first tandem Small Cast. And as you can tell, I'm actually getting shit ready. But we do have a guest, as you can hear, we do have a guest star. So, Frank, you want to introduce yourself?
All right. Well, I am the artist formerly known as Frank LaRue. Nobody has actually asked me, but the name that I chose is from a Tom Waits musical called Frank's Wild Ears, which was, I think, way back in the 80s, I want to say. So in case you didn't notice from both the choice of my name and the avatar on the Discord server, I'm a big fan of Tom Waits. So yeah, that's kind of where that came from. I have been sort of an aspiring writer for most of my life, as has been established on the server multiple times by me and else other people. I am old as dirt, so I am probably one of the oldest people on the server, if not the oldest person on the server. I have been writing off and on, very sporadically, since probably my college years, because that's kind of what I knew I wanted to do, even though I was going into a more highly technical field. And it isn't until probably 2016-ish, let's call it that, that I really started knuckling down and writing seriously, where I was putting out not just, you know, a couple hundred words here and there and then abandoning it. I was just, I'm going to try writing an actual full-blown story.
And that was that was Iron Hugh Man, right?
That was the first one I did on the HFY server. I actually, before that, I wrote approximately something like, hang on, I'm looking at my notes here. Something on the order of, this is going to sound embarrassing, 400,000 words of fanfic.
Woo.
That's what I started writing in 2016, because, and it was kind of odd. And I think that if we want to kind of take a step back, if there's two things I want to impress on people who are listening to this, whoever may be listening to this, because I know we have a bunch of aspiring writers on the server. Number one, the only way you get good at writing is to write. And number two, you have to figure out what kind of writer you are before you can really start writing. So the number one I would say is, I hate hauling it out, but there's this old quote by a guy, Henry Miller, who was an author from the early 1900s. And he said something on the order of, you have to write a million words before you find your voice as a writer, which sounds horrifying. You know, that's like saying, okay, you want to be the thing you want to be, you got to climb up Mount Everest and touch the top with your hand. But it is a very apt quote, I think, because you really do have to just, the only way you get good is by practicing it. I don't believe in anything like innate talent. I don't think there's any such thing as, you're genetically, you may be genetically predisposed to want to do let's say writing or drawing or some sort of artistic expression, but to get good at that expression of whatever your chosen medium is, you really have to practice it. And writing is no different from drawing or painting or sculpture or whatever you want to say.
So I'm going to actually, thanks for the segue, I'm going to say this because we're approaching 5 minutes in. This podcast is about writing, if you hadn't figured that out yet. Yeah, I just realized that we didn't actually introduce what the topic was. So this podcast is just going to sort of be a it's going to be rambling. I'm going to be honest, and I think Frank can attest to that.
Oh yeah.
But we're just going to be talking about how do you get good as a writer? How do you start? How do you, you know, how do you, I guess, push that rock up the hill? And I heard something along the same lines as what you just said, Frank. It was, and I don't know the writer who said it, but he basically said you've got a million bad words in your pen, and you need to write them all out before you get to the good ones. And I think I've heard it also said that you need to masters, whoever they are and whatever their craft is, suffer for 7 years in silence on average. So you get these people anywhere from Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci to, you know, B.B. King and Prince and all that other good stuff where it's like they're doing this for years and then they suddenly, quote unquote, show up out of nowhere. And that's not the case. It is just that grind. So I guess it's going to be my first question to you, Frank, is what do you do to get past that grind? When you're doing your fan fiction and, you know, Spock and Q have finally had their love tryst.
Confessed their undying love for each other.
Yeah.
I would say one of the biggest hurdles for me, and again, this is just for me, I don't want to presume to speak for anybody else, is you'll often hear in writing circles this notion of, are you a pantser or a plotter?
I have never heard that before, ever.
Okay, so a plotter is, as the name would imply, you're somebody who would write out a very detailed outline. You have all the characters outlined. You have at least bullet points for each character. Every scene is laid out. You know exactly where it's going to be. You know exactly what's going to happen in the scene. And so then once you have that outline laid out, all you have to do is go back in and write it. Pantser is a term that implies that you're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants. And what I had to find out, and I think this is probably the best piece of advice I could give, is figure out which one you are. Are you a pantser or a plotter? A pantser will just sit there and say, I kind of want to get over there. It's a little bit like, if I may use a terrible analogy, it's you're in New York and you want to get to LA. You know your end point, you know your destination, but you have no idea how you're going to get there. Or you know, you're kind of like, okay, I got to head west. That's all I know right now. So that's what you do.
I'm definitely a pantser.
And I think we are both. Based on what I have seen, what you've mentioned of as far as your own plotting or your outlining, it's very much like, okay, two or three sentences, it's like A, B, C, and then, you know, that's like beginning to end. And then the rest of it, you're going to kind of figure out as you go along.
I don't even get to C. Like, I'll get to B, and then suddenly I find the next point is like F, and I'm like, well, shit, there was a point at which we should have clearly stopped and we passed it, but let's keep going and see what happens. Like, there's...
And I think that's the thing that always, like I mentioned, you know, back in my day, way back, you know, when dinosaurs roamed the Earth 20 or 30 years ago, I was trying to write as a plotter because my training, my education was in the sciences, hard sciences. So I thought, foolishly thought, oh, that's, well, of course.
That's how you
I'm
do
an
it.
An outliner.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. You lay it all out and then you go back in and do it. And I think the problem was what I found out was that is probably the dullest way to write for me. Not throwing shade at anybody else who does it, you know, however you figure it out. But I think that's probably the biggest thing I can say is experiment.
I could
sit there and say, you know, okay, I'm going to write a 5,000 words short story. Do I sit there and like really outline what's happening, who all the main characters are, or do I just simply start writing and say, two characters walk into a room and start talking to each other, and so that's it?
So I think one of the problems that we pantsers have, and I need to figure out another term for that, because that just sounds, that sounds borderline risque. But I think one of the problems that would pop up is writing yourself into a corner. Because you have your start, you have your end destination, and then you're two-thirds of the way there, and then you know, from New York to L.A., and then you find yourself in the Grand Canyon. And you're like, oh, well, shit. You know, I not only cannot go west anymore, but now I'm headed south into the Gulf of Mexico. Like, this is the worst thing that could happen. So I guess my question to you is how do you, A, realize you are either A, about to write yourself into a corner, or two, you have written yourself into a corner, and then B, how do you get out? because that's going to be rough.
That is a very good question, and you kind of have, the best thing I can say is, that's why I mean, I know you got into this whole thing writing horse words.
Yeah.
On 4chan.
Yes.
So for me, I got into this writing shitty fanfic on fanfiction.net.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, either way, I think that's why they have the whole thing of, well, you got to write a million words before you find your voice as an author. I think a million words is sort of the upper limit, but, you know, there is a lower limit. What it is, I don't know. Like I said, I don't believe in innate talent.
Right.
But what I would say is you kind of get a sense of, oh, this is how a story works. And so therefore, I want to take it kind of in that direction. I have occasionally written myself, I wouldn't say into a corner, but sort of like, oh, I'm really getting far away from where I wanted to be, so I better steer this boat back towards the shore that I'm aiming at. It's a little interesting because, much like you, I think I write these things, at least thus far, I've been writing them very much chapter to chapter.
Yeah.
There's like been a couple areas where I've been writing ahead where I've had a couple of chapters in the bank before I post to the next one, but that's been very rare. Usually it's sort of like, okay, after that, now I'm going to write the next one and figure out how to incorporate what I want to do in this one with what I did in the last one. And the best thing... the best thing I can say is just avoid entanglements.
What do you mean by entanglements?
Well, I can give you a very good example, which I have bitched about to you.
Yeah, no, hit me.
In quite detail. That is the Helljumper series.
Okay.
Now we're going to leap right to HFY.
Sure, sure. So let's, because some people may not be familiar with the Helljumper series. So the TLDR, the Helljumper series, and stop me here because I'm going off of memory because I dropped the series as well a while back. Earth has an intergalactic empire, at least kind of, maybe sort of. A ship comes out of warp and everyone's dead. The crew pod lands and only one guy survives, the titular Helljumper. And he is, he befriends a basically pseudo-tribal, pseudo-feudal, I'm guessing like ancient Greece technology level civilization.
Not even that. They're pretty much like a Native American.
Okay, so we're
tribalism,
like,
yeah.
We're like pre-Mesopotamia then. And basically boinks one of the aliens, and then that's when I tapped out. But, mm-hmm. Okay, so I did remember the series. So what is the gripe?
Well, okay, so the big question, I think this is where it's sort of like you mentioned, this is the analogy of you're in New York, You want to reach Los Angeles. How do you get there? Thing is, you kind of know, okay, I got to head west. I don't want to be heading north. I don't want to be heading south. I pretty much want to be heading west. Because the problem with Helljumper, and I'm not shitting on the guy, he has some talent as a writer, but I think the problem is he's trying to stretch this damn thing out.
Ah.
So you have, you mentioned very much at the beginning in your very succinct summary, a human ship comes out of the warp or jump space or, you know.
Whatever. The MacGuffin.
Wavium.
Yeah.
And something messes it up. The ship blows up and there's one survivor. Well, as it turns out, and this is spoilers for the Helljumper, if you haven't read the damn thing.
It's fine.
There's some funky alien, highly advanced alien technology on the planet where the guy landed. And that technology is doing some sort of, you know, fucky-wucky with the subspace around the
sure.
system. So anybody jumping in is going to get messed up. So the TLDR in my case is, because I have read further than you have, is there was a rescue mission sent because they kind of said, oh, one of our ships got lost here
sure.
and there was a distress call or something. So Earth sends out a research vessel, a bigger one than what initially jumped into the system. And so there's like this whole thing and blah, 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 blah. The second arc is them getting there. And they jump into the system. The ship gets fucked up. But not to the extent that it blows up. It's just like, oh, that really hurt us. We better not jump again. Because if we jump again, next time we might actually blow up.
Okay.
So they're stuck there. This is the... I don't want to call it the ticking clock. But, you know, if you read like sort of the... dumbass screenwriters things where it's like, oh, it's act one, act two, act three, or whatever, or the five-act structure, or whatever they talk
sure.
about. They always talk about, oh, you got to have a ticking clock in there. And this is a great ticking clock. I got to say, it's like, oh, you have this weird alien technology. You don't understand it at all, and you have to understand it, or you're going to be stuck there for the rest of your lives.
So it's a Chekhov's gun kind of...
Exactly.
Okay.
But the problem is, instead of jumping into the system saying, oh, yes, here's the person we're, you know, we're trying to save this guy, or, you know, there's one survivor from the ship that we came after, and, oh, he made contact, which he really shouldn't have because of there's this other uber empire above the human empire, whatever. There's all that political meandering, which is fine. I think that's fine. But then it's like, okay, can you get some people in there to reverse engineer the thing that's making everything go all fucky-wucky? It seems like that's like the first thing you got to do.
And he's not.
He's not. It's all like, oh, there's this alien civilization. We got to figure it out. We got to have the cute, human... The sister to the brother of the guy who crash landed on the planet.
Of course.
She's got to go down there
yeah.
and potentially get... I haven't read the last couple of chapters. I got to be totally honest. But they were heavily implying that she was going to get romantically entangled with one of the natives. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Right.
Are you really going to do... I mean, once is... It's like the old joke, you know, once is coincidence, or once is just random chance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. So the next time, you know, it's like, okay, now two times, whatever, three times is, all right,
yeah.
Are they putting out some kind of pheromones that are causing the humans to want to do, you know, the horizontal mambo with them? I don't know. But so this is a very long-winded way of saying... I guess I'm using it as an example of you have you set up a very clear objective. And if you set up that clear objective, you have to get to that objective within a reasonable time frame. And it doesn't include having asinine shit like, for example, in the Helljumper, the Arc 3, there was this sergeant who
I
bitched about this at you
already. Yeah, so what I think you're getting at is that don't have filler arcs. Because I don't wanna have this as be a 30-minute meander. No offense.
Right.
But I think that's what you're getting at is don't have filler arcs. But to sort of direct us back to the initial question for how do I get out of writing myself into corners? How do we do that? For me personally, it's a couple things. Number one, always write the universe. Don't write the individual story, because you are going to have stories that end. Even though Arc 3 and Arc 4 have some of the same characters, it's you know, Arc 5 that I have for Small may not. We might be moving on to new people. So the issue you have, and you can see that with J.K. Rowling, where she's done the expanded Potterverse, and now she's talking about wizards just shitting themselves in the streets and then disappearing. But that's the thing is that she wrote the story. The story ended, and then she did not establish the larger universal canon. Nothing existed outside of Harry Potter, and so now she's coming back and you're trying to ham-fistedly shove more stuff in there. And everyone's kind of like, "What the fuck are you doing?" But when you find that you are writing yourself into a corner. When you find that you are, you know, oh shit, the characters and how they would normally act has now driven me over here. And I think that's incredibly important is that don't hand your characters idiot balls ever. The most recent story, the most recent chapter, if you guys are following Small, which hilariously enough, there's a lot of you that don't, the most recent chapter, I could have done some real long-winded bullshit, with, you know, explaining to the aliens about this pandemic that's going on, and we knocked it out in two paragraphs. Just literally, the characters told the people that needed to know what they needed to know when they needed to know it. And you don't hand people idiot balls, because if you do so, then it's very obvious that you are railroading the script. But if you do find that you are in a corner and your characters don't have idiot balls, which you don't want to suddenly give them something because it will do a tone shift, what you simply do is you then follow that character or characters, you follow that to its most logical next step. And each step, you're going to look for a chance for these characters to give you an out. As we talked about, because I'm a pantser, I bump into walls all the damn time. And what I do is I just let my characters naturally progress down the paths of logic that they have, and lo and behold, eventually I'll have an out. And it's not going to be what I originally wanted, but it's going to get me back over the Grand Canyon. It's going to get me back headed towards Los Angeles. So that's how I get out of basically writing myself into a corner, which hilariously enough, I do at least twice in any given arc. Is I find myself in a corner, I'm like, ah, fuck, you know, how do I get out of here? And within a chapter, it usually an escape presents itself, which I guess we can now sort of talk about that if you want, because I want to. Usually 30 minutes is long enough for a podcast, so I think we might just end this as our third question. How do you do pacing and characters? Because I'm you know, personally, I'm over here and I do shit posts, and everybody likes that, and that's fine, but I'm not over here doing major drama pieces. I tried a little bit of that in Arc 2, and I never lost more readers or more patrons than in Arc 2. It was incredible. So how do you do that?
That's a very good question, because the pacing is something I'm still working on, because I would say, first off, you will go out there and you'll see lots of books with things like, well, Robert McKee, I think that's his name. Robert McKee. He has the whole, like, you know, the 3-act structure or the 5-act structure, or this is how you do something. Keeping in mind that's for a movie, not for a written out narrative. You have a little bit more freedom in a novel or a story, a written out story, rather than in a movie. But I would say biggest thing I can say is if you have an end goal in mind, then you're halfway there.
You're living on a prayer.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's, again, going back to the analogy, it's sort of like if you're in New York and you're like, I'm going to head west. What city are you going to? There's, you know, 5 to 10 large cities on the West Coast. Which one are you heading to? I don't know. I think if you can, I mean, I'm very much, like I said, I found out I'm very much a pantser rather than a plotter. But I do try to have at least, okay, this is the most definite end goal. And when I'm writing a story, I do try to keep that end goal in mind. But I also keep in mind that that end goal may change. To give an example, I sent you the very initial outline of what I was kind of thinking of for the Small Detective Arc 3.
Yep.
And I think the final product wound up being very different from what I had sent you. I think what I had sent you was there was a lot of the villain, quote unquote, was a lot more active in it. And I think what I wound up writing was something more much along the lines of Ocean's 11 in space.
Which was popular.
And I mean, well, that was the way it wound up. And I think, I mean, there's always this question of what is more important in your story? Is it the characters or is it the plot or some other thing? And I think what I've wound up finding out is that characters will drive the plot for you if you let them.
I 100% agree.
So, good.
No. I mean, that's taking the words right out of my mouth. Characters make the plot. And then I think it's like the layer cake of a story is the foundation, basic, most basic layer is world building. And you can write entire stories about a world and the people within that world don't matter. And then from the world building, you have institution. And you can tell institutional stories all day long. You can write entire books about institutional stories, about governments fighting governments or religions fighting religions. And again, the people don't matter. And then I think where we are now in sort of the current paradigm of storytelling is that it's all 100% character driven. You know, everything else has just merged into world building, and now we're at this last layer of, okay, you know, I the Human Federation's fine, technology's fine, all this other stuff is fine, but what is Jim gonna do? What is Susan going to think? And I think you're absolutely right. Characters move the plot. Just don't hand them idiot balls and you won't have a dumb plot.
And that's kind of the thing that I have found is that the characters, this sounds very schizophrenic, but it's the God honest truth, is that I'll be writing something or I'll have something plotted out and I'll get to that point and the characters themselves will kind of rise up within my head and say, no, you dipshit, we would do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're smart. We would see that this is an obvious trap, or we would see that this other thing is there that we have to take care of, and we would deal with that first. So I guess that's what I would say is that at the end of it all is, you know, trust in your characters. If you have good characters, you'll have a good story. And the only other question I would have, maybe a question back for you, is because this is where I found you and kind of where this whole thing blew up is, what drew you to the HFY subreddit in the first place?
Oh, God. A random click on Reddit. I was looking for stuff to read to pass the time because my work was insane. And so I needed some escapism. And I found HFY, and it sort of smacked of the same type of escapism that 4chan does, especially in the right threads. And so I was like, oh, okay, these guys are probably interesting, and it's a story subreddit, because even though they say, oh, we have pictures and movies, you don't. It's all stories. And then I looked at the body of work, and it was a massive body of work, and I said, this is going to keep me entertained for months. And I just started to read. That was it.
I think I was pretty much in the same boat. I can't remember, honestly, what was the click that drew me to that particular subreddit. But I will tell you what made me stay, and that is that modern science fiction, at least the published, officially published, you know, with books that are on shelves in Barnes & Noble, a lot of it is very much, we're fucked, we're screwed, we're assholes, we don't deserve to go into space and meet space friends, we don't actually deserve anything, we're just shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm being very generic there, and there's a lot of published stuff out there, officially published stuff out there, that is very good, but I think the thing that drove me, or that drew me into HFY, was, oh, actually, no, we do have some awesome elements to ourselves. Of course, philosophical viewpoint comes with downsides, namely, you have a shitload of stories where, oh, we're the baddest motherfuckers ever, and we're just gonna like lay waste, and you know, they have guns, but their guns are calibrated for their kind and not us.
Yeah,
and basically, like, we're the Kryptonians, basically.
Yeah,
which... of the galaxy. And I'm kind of sitting there going, yeah, that doesn't quite work. But I think there was enough there of that whole thing of, we're not useless. We have value. And I think that's what kept me, you know, kind of occasionally browsing that subreddit. And then, of course, I found you, you know, the very first They Are Small. And I think what drew me to it was just, hey, there's no big deal. There's no, like, I mean, that very first chapter was, there's no huge intergalactic war. There's no nothing. It's just, here's a human among some snacks, and she's just, you know, kind of making her way the best she can. And I was just like, ah, it's nice. This is comfy. I like this, you know.
Well, then we'll end on that comfy note, because it is. It's good to be comfy. But, yeah, I know this was a bit of a departure away from sort of the monologuing and the soliloquying that I usually do on this. And it was a pleasure. Again, Frank, thank you very much for swinging by.
You are very welcome.
I do appreciate that. We'll probably be doing this again in the future, if I'm being brutally honest. But only reason why I'm ending it here, y'all, is because hour-long podcasts are heard by nobody. And 30 minutes is pretty much a good cutoff point. So if you want to see this again, if you want to hear more of this kind of actually unplanned rambling for half an hour.
Very unplanned.
Just let us know. Yeah, we were actually calibrating the software, and it's not really calibrating. We said, fuck it, let's just go. So we're doing it live. But if you want to hear more of this, let us know in the comments or ping me on Discord or whatever. And yeah, thanks again for listening, and until next time, take it easy.
All righty.